But basically what they said is that this isn't a normal infection that civilian infrastructure is set up to deal with. So they specifically asked that the military take control. This was last week. You're beginning to see that roll out right now. At a surface analysis, that because it has this capacity to penetrate the blood-brain barrier, any of the symptoms that we can expect from neural infection, you should be waiting to accept them with the COVID pathogen. As you were saying, like sort of a month or so ago, I didn't expect to be doing this, trying to get this sort of message out. I was just sort of watching, but the degree of incompetence I was seeing, I just felt compelled to try and have to do something. And it's very, very obvious to me that the neuropsychiatric component is just being ignored completely.
With the COVID-19 virus crisis and the number of casualties with the flu, if you have not been looking at C60 as a means to significantly improve your immunities by now, you should be. Here's why. First, a strong and healthy immune system is your body's first defense, and for those with a strong immune system, your body will adequately fight viruses without medical intervention. Second, C60 is safe as long as you are taking high-quality C60 with no added fillers or solvents. Third, C60 is the best means of removing free radicals from your body that exists. It's at least 200 times better at this function than vitamin C and any other antioxidant. Fourth, as Dr. Chu Li stated on a previous show, COVID-19 creates massive amounts of free radicals, which is causing organ failure for those with weaker immune systems. So now it becomes clear you need the best free radical fighter that exists, and that is C60 with black seed oil and curcumin. Why black seed oil and curcumin? Because these two ingredients are the absolute best at supporting C60 to fight viruses and to improve your immune system. Go to sarahwestall.com/shop and learn more about why this formula is so powerful for building your immunities. And it's now available in gel capsules and by diffuser for more serious needs. Be sure to read the research and, of course, use the current coupons to save money when you buy. Patrons also receive a 10% discount. You can find that code at patreon.com/sarahwestall. Remember, keeping you and your family safe is the most important thing you can do. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. This episode, I have Dr. Kevin McCarron coming to the show. He's a neuroscientist, and he's been looking at this virus, COVID-19, is something that nobody is talking about, and he's trying to get this out to a bigger audience. He says that he is beholden to no one. He's in Japan, and he doesn't work for any government institution or any university that's going to suppress his information, and he really wants to get this out. As far as this virus is attacking, and it seems like it's going up the brainstem, and it's creating really interesting behaviors, and why he believes that doctors in Italy and elsewhere are not seeing patients recover. And he explains it at the end in really good detail at the end of this video on how the brainstem is contributing to not having the organs not work well. And he explains it and how the brain just is getting messed up. You know, that's my very scientific way I say it's messed up, but he'll explain it. And I want to say I'm not on video with him because he's in Japan and we are having issues. I'm having multiple issues with multiple people as far as doing video and being able to have good streaming because internets everywhere are bogged down, and I just want to make sure we give you good quality. So I am including different things he's giving me, but it's not going to, people on audio anyway, you're fine. I have a lot of people on audio. In fact, I just over the last 24 hours, I reached number one in Taiwan, which I'm really happy about. And that's happening. More and more countries are being able to get my stuff. And I know I'm really censored. So when I see that, I'm really excited to see that. So let's get into this really important interview with Dr. Kevin McCarron. Hi, Kevin. Welcome to the show.
Hello. How are you doing, Sarah?
I'm great. You have been highly recommended to me to come on and discuss what you have learned about this virus being much more than what people are thinking it is. And based on all your neural research, first, can you tell people what your background is? And then I want to talk about how you started getting into this.
Okay, sure. So I have a 20 plus years researching the area of the brain called the corticobasal ganglia networks. Most people are familiar with those. When your grandparents get Parkinson's disease, it's that system that begins to break down. So I do study in that particular region, but my main interest is the other end of the extreme, which is sort of involuntary movements and neuropsychiatric disorders that are linked to that part of the brain. And I've spent much of my research career teasing apart those networks, trying to understand what they do, and also trying to mitigate the effects through surgical interventions by planting, it's called a deep brain stimulator. It's much like a cardiac pacemaker, but you put it in and you try to modulate activity in the brain such that the symptoms are not so distressing for the individual and families.
You have your PhD in this, and why did you decide that, or how did you get into looking at this virus? I mean, what triggered you to say there's more here?
So like everyone else, there's a degree of sort of, whether it's morbid fascination, but fascination with what was coming out of China. And before they really started clamping down on the data coming out, not the numbers, but the videos of people just sort of dropping down in the street, falling into like seizure states, and then the apparent difficulty of getting them to recover with what was supposed to be a viral pneumonia. And the usual approaches were not working sufficiently. And I saw some behaviors that I immediately recognized from my laboratory testing.
And what were those?
So there's plenty of videos sort of going around where people start spitting and contaminating objects. And it's almost like they're sort of on autopilot when you do it. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
There was a lot of articles about that, and everybody just thought that people were being, you know, not naive, but sarcastic and pessimistic, or
it was a case
of the whole thing was stupid.
It's a case of I've got it, so everyone else has got to have it. And that's one way of thinking about it. I think there's something,
well, that's how they presented it. So, but you said there's more to this.
I do think there's more to this, because what we know is, and we've known this since the sort of SARS and MERS outbreaks, is these viruses are what are called neurotropic agents, which means they're able to penetrate the blood-brain barrier and directly target networks in the central nervous system. And so to give you an example, so the olfactory system, the olfactory bulb sends nerve endings into the mucosa of the nasal cavity, and the virus can latch onto those, and basically it can walk itself, it can penetrate into the axon and basically walk itself back to the cell body and then jump to the next neuron, right? So it's called it's a transsynaptic neurotropic agent. And the one agent that people are going to be familiar with that does something very similar is rabies. And why bring up rabies? Well, we use it in a neuroscience context because we use that property of jumping from synapse to synapse as a way to discover the extent of a neural network. So as a neuroscientist, you say, okay, we think this behavior comes from this region. You try to put traces in, and then you try to follow the axons and the network, and you try to build a sort of conceptual understanding of the anatomical organization. And that's what rabies has been used for in a research context. And I'm not saying COVID is as virulent as as rabies, but it does have the same potential mechanisms in it. And as such, it has the potential to manipulate regions of the brain, the basal ganglia. So the ability to transfect into the into the nervous system has the ability to then start modifying behavior, right? So a classic example that people are sort of aware of is the I'll get the noise again, but the toxoplasmosis in cats. So there's a life cycle to that pathogen that the cats excrete it, the rats eat it, and it alters the behavior of rats, right? So they become less fearful of cats, right? And then another cat will eat the rat and so on and so forth. And that's how the agent propagates. It's the same with rabies, right? Rabies makes an animal go into a rage state, and then they want to go and bite people. And you can basically say that it's the virus hijacking, it's hijacking their behaviors in such a way as to give advantage to the virus itself, right? And it's nudging behavior. These networks, the limbic system, which is very, very close to the olfactory system. So smell is one of your most primitive and visceral senses and networks, because it enables you to respond very quickly to the environment. Same with sight, sound. They're all plugged into this sort of central network. And if that gets hijacked, then you can sort of, you get it into those, so let's call it a rage state that you get with rabies, right? And imagine something similar with COVID. And there you start to see the mechanism for why people would just start spitting. There's the explosion into violence. So there's a lot of sort of anecdotal footage coming out of people, you know, losing their temper on planes and spitting on planes. And, you know, these would be defined as edge cases. So it's hard to sort of build a statistical model out of them because they're sort of few in number. But it's something that you can make a prediction from the model. And I guess the sort of best analogy I could give is the weather, right? So you know that over the year, sometimes it's sunny, sometimes it's rainy, but then sometimes, for whatever reason, you could get a typhoon or a hurricane. And that's the edge case of that complex system. Does that make sense?
It does. So what do you think this means? What does this mean to the overall humanity if this is a virus that affects our nervous system?
So if you look at the figures that are, it's a good question, and I'm going to try my best to answer it as comprehensively as I can, but there's a lot of assumptions in this, so please keep that in mind. So what they're saying right now is that many people appear to be asymptomatic, right? And the clinicians and the doctors right now are thinking, well, they don't have respiratory pneumonia, they must be okay. But what we don't know is how the agent penetrating into the nervous system is affecting their day-to-day behavior. So within the last week, there's been reports coming out. First, it came out of France, the otopharyngologists, but ear, nose, and throat doctors were reporting people losing sense of smell, hearing, and this is direct indicators that it could come from inflammation within the sinus cavities as well. That's, you can't rule that out. But long-term anosmia, which is loss of smell, was reported from Wuhan. And if I just sort of jump slides.
Well, could that also be why people are having long-term other problems? Like, I don't know, or organ damage would probably be from just the basic issues, but could there be other long-term damage?
Yes.
Based on this neuro, how about like infertility and all those other issues that they're starting to see? Could it be based on neurological issues?
So the fertility issue, I would just say, because the primary target seems to be the angiotensin converting enzyme receptor, which is everywhere, right? So if you wanted to pick something that had the ability to spread very easily, you want it to be able to attach to. You don't want sort of very specialized receptors that it needs to lock onto. The angiotensin converting enzyme receptor, you can find it from the genitourinary tract right into the brain. Okay, so it's possible for the virus to latch on there. And I would just say that once it's latched on, like a virus, it's going to go in, it's going to start its reproductive cycle, it's going to lyse cells, and any system that it transfects, it's probably likely going to cause long-term damage. In the case of the nervous system, once you get past the acute phases, so if you're suffering from loss of smell, That could be a permanent issue. There could be myalgia, pain or neuralgia, which is sort of phantom pains in the limbs and muscles, and actually can be quite debilitating because it's very hard to treat. And you know, that you're getting into chronic pain disorders, and that opens up a whole new Pandora's box of treatments and problems for the person that's infected. So I do think, just at a surface analysis, that because it has this capacity to penetrate the blood-brain barrier, any of the symptoms that we can expect from neural infection, you should be waiting to accept them with the COVID pathogen.
Okay, and that's just a ton. Anything that your brain controls could be affecting. Now, you got hold of a secret video that was from some high-level governments of what about being a bioweapon. Can you talk about that and what you learned from that?
So I'll just say it's from the European Union, and leave it at that. And basically, the top clinicians in the field for virology, epidemiology, and other technocrats were having a meeting discussing what they wanted to do. And the doctors and professors basically deferred. We can look at the video later on. I've got a little clip that we can look at. But basically, what they said is that this isn't a situation, this isn't a normal infection that civilian infrastructure is set up to deal with. So they specifically asked that the military take control. This was last week. You're beginning to see that roll out right now.
Yep.
And they're basically saying that the military has to deal with the triage and, I don't want to say treatment because the treatment's still probably going to come from the civilian side, but it's a. We've seen enough movies where the army sort of does come in and sort of establishes control because they, as a organization, I think, you know, my father was in the military, and you know, there's specific protocols that they follow to make sure that their structure works, right? And if the governments, and look, you even watch Donald Trump. I want to say about 10 days ago, basically say I'm handing it off to governors, and basically saying the governors have the power to institute martial law. And you're, and I'm not in the US, so I don't want to speak too much to that. But my impression was that you're beginning to see the movement of military assets, and you're beginning to see the psychological operations with respect to information flow that's saying to the people, okay, you better get ready for some sort of prolonged.
Yeah, you are seeing that. But Donald Trump wants to get things back going because he's like, this is ridiculous. But it just seems like that same in fight back and forth between a deep state and another side, two deep states fighting. I don't know what I'm watching, but that's what it looks like. And we both know, and we talked about this before we got on, that you don't waste a crisis. We know that they're doing other things behind this, but this is very real. This virus is a real, you don't make up overwhelmed hospital systems. I mean, it just,
It would be
you
impossible.
don't make that
It would be
up.
impossible.
Yeah. So people are getting ill and they are doing something and this virus is real. It's just, they're really using it for a whole bunch of other things. And I just, that's the scary part. You seeing a top secret video or a leaked video showing that, I don't know. You said you got it from an insider and so forth. It shows you that there's just more, it's a bigger operation going on. I get worried that this is a long-term biowarfare. That's more than just one weapon that accidentally got it. Maybe it's a weapon that got out on purpose. Maybe it's a lab manipulated thing that got out on accident. If it's, I'd rather have it be the accidental one because then it wouldn't be a warfare situation. If it's a warfare situation, it could get really dire because we don't want this going back and forth. We don't want another one unleashed.
No.
But yeah, and you're saying that this is a little more serious than people are realizing. So what else are you seeing that people need to be aware of?
So what caught my attention was, okay, so the first thing was this sort of all this video coming out of people spitting on stuff and contaminating it. That was the first thing that was to me just like, oh, I know exactly where that's coming from. That's the limbic system being sort of hijacked and people's thresholds being pushed to usually where you wouldn't do it. So a good caveat to keep in your mind all the time is that when they say that the brain consumes so much energy, right? So let's say half, right? Just as a ballpark figure, half your glucose is just sent to your brain to help with the metabolism. And that metabolism is literally geared towards keeping you still, right? So all the really high active areas in the brain, so the globus pallidus, the cerebellum, are all inhibitory networks, and they're there to sort of suppress activity in the brain. So you're able to do actions in a sort of efficient manner, and you don't do 10 other actions as you reach to drink your coffee. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So you could be like your leg could be kicking out. You could be spilling your coffee the whole way up because you can't control it, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And so if anyone's familiar with dystonia or choreoathetosis, anything like that, where you've lost the ability, so it's called abnormal involuntary movements. So people get that with Parkinson's, where they're given the treatment. And although it's the drugs seem to work, eventually they get these abnormal movements and they become more problematic than the disease itself. Okay.
And you've been doing a ton of research on this that shows that this is what's going on. And you have YouTube videos and you have all these things. So people who want to get a lot more detail to understand the science behind it, that's what you're showing, right, on your YouTube videos?
Yeah. I'm just trying to explain to people that there are neural mechanisms that are not easy to understand, but if you're prepared to put the time in, they provide a conceptual framework for you to start looking at the stuff going on around you. And I'll just, let's make a hypothetical, okay? You're a bit nervous about, you know, I find it amusing, but the toilet paper issue in the United States, okay? So everyone feels that they've got to go and get toilet paper, right? And you get to the store and there's already videos of people sort of losing it, getting into fights. And I would make the argument that they're probably asymptomatic, but if they've been infected by this agent into the limbic system and it messes around with the amygdala and all these regions that are involved in fight and flight, you're likely to get caught up in something that otherwise you wouldn't normally do. And that's why I am trying to sort of get this warning out, right? So there's a very solid scientific basis for it, which we'll go through. And if they want to get the, you know, I've got hours of lectures that they can watch if they want to really get to it. And there's an open invitation to anyone that's listening to this. I try to answer every question that's sent to me, and just to make sure that people do have the right information.
Well, and what do people do? What can they do to protect themselves? Because you're saying that what they're telling us, and you've been open telling WHO and others that they're not giving us good information. Mm-hmm. But there are things people can do to protect themselves from this, as well as just the general what people think
so,
is the problem.
Again, a really good and germane point. And so I'll just flip a slide. So you can see General Adams, the Surgeon General there. This was when he stood up in front of the country, basically told the country that you don't need masks. They're no good for you. While at the same time, they were requisitioning every bit of PPE they could get their hands on, right? And masks do help. That's the one thing that I've been trying to hammer home for weeks. The more you can do to stop exposure to this pathogen, and with the caveat that you will never stop it 100%, okay? But the more you can reduce your exposure, the better chance you are of getting into an acute situation where you require hospitalization. And we can get into the hospitalization aspect and the neuroscience part of why people are, they're not coming out of hospitals the way the clinicians are predicting, right? And that's why infrastructure is beginning to be overwhelmed and why there is this call for military control because what you're going to have, you have to control a population that's one, it needs to get hold of food, two, probably distrustful of any government and the machinations behind the scene, and three, a lot of people just have families and kids, and you know they're going to get scared, right? And so you might get yourself into a situation where if you were forewarned with the information, you might avoid it. So if you watch my videos, a lot of what I do is I say you can make a mask, right? So as I'm recording this, you know, you can make a mask from paper. My wife just stitches masks. You know, she comes home and she makes masks from patching cloth and a bit of elastic. That's enough, right? Just to help prevent these agents getting into your system generally. Not only was the Surgeon General in dereliction of duty by saying what he did to the American public, the people like Elon Musk who were touting this as a dumb thing to get worried about have put the American people and the world in danger, the same as the World Health Organization. You know, if we're going to start throwing arrows around, they are negligent in their duty. Specifically when they changed the definitions of pandemic, as a pandemic was emerging everywhere. Okay, so all these people need to be held to account, in my opinion. And they need to be held to account because the most simple of advice could have helped many, many people, which is just get a mask. Make a mask from your T-shirt, right? Wear a bandana. Stop stuff getting into your face, right? And people will try and argue and say, well, you know, you need an N95 or an N100 mask. Maybe, yeah, that's best. You could also do with a nuclear biological chemical suit and full hazmat gear. But you know what? You don't have that. But there are ways to mitigate your exposure. One, don't go out and engage with a number of forces that probably are not your friend right now. So if the military are being deployed on the streets under these very precarious conditions, if you're going out causing trouble, they're going to give you trouble back, right? So until we have a proper understanding of what's going on, which includes the neural aspect, this is the critical thing. Everyone's just thinking it's a viral pneumonia. It's not, right? And this is what we need to get to and why there's a potential for it to be to cascade into something much worse.
Will everybody eventually get this? Because that's what happens is that there's people that just are immune, but the people who aren't immune will eventually get it. Yep. And it stays on surfaces too for, yep. I've seen reports up to 17 days.
Yeah. And I would just put it this way. There's no way you can maintain a BSL-4 free posture all the time. It's not possible. And like all other agents, like herpes zoster and simplex and all these other agents, literally like 90% of the population carries them and your body deals with them. And so organizations that are saying, well, we need to go for herd immunity, I probably think in the long term, that's probably the best thing to do. But what they should have done is when the Surgeon General was standing in front of people was just say, well, you know, it'll help mitigate the harm getting towards a stable state of herd immunity if you've got some gloves and you've got some mask and you just take care. And that's what they didn't do right at the beginning. They told you, just wash your hands, you'll be okay. It's going to pass. And there was
good luck. Yeah. You have to add the good luck in there. We just, as a sarcasm.
Yeah. And to me, it was incorrigible way of dealing with the public.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. Now, you also talk about the fact that a vaccine is just, the fact that they're talking so much about a vaccine is kind of ridiculous because it's just not, with all the mutations, it's just likely not going to be what they say it's going to be.
Yeah, so like I say, I'm not a virologist or someone that is expert in epidemiology or vaccine research. But I'll give you an example, okay? So
But even though you're not an expert, you're a doctor and you've talked to different people and you've done your research. So what you're going to say is pretty good information.
Well, I hope it's informed to some degrees.
Okay. Okay. Let's go forward.
So because of the environment that I work in and we use rabies, which is another neurotropic agent, I have to get a vaccine for rabies every few years. Okay, but rabies is quite a well understood pathogen, and the mutation rate in rabies, like I said, I'm not an expert, seems to be minimal. That they can make a stable vaccine that you can use, provided if you get infected with rabies, you've got a window where you can treat it. Okay, and if you miss that window, then you're done. And basically, there's like a 99% fatality. So in that case, they can make vaccines. Are they going to make a vaccine out of something which seems to have exploded from nowhere, whatever its providence is? Okay, that seems to have these almost supernatural capacity to evade every system that we have in place to supposedly contain. They seem to have a vaccine right now. You just need to be very skeptical. And I'm of the opinion if they're going to move something out on a mass scale, there has to be double, triple blinded studies, and there has to be studies into the long-term effects of the vaccine. Okay, especially as it's a neurotropic agent. Okay.
And that's what I'm hearing from all sorts of medical scientists and doctors is that their whole fast tracking a vaccine is pie in the sky based on what we're talking about here. And with SARS and Ebola, the studies I've seen is the vaccines they actually put out and did trials on were worse than the disease itself.
Look, and the same is happening with the quinine-based agents and the Cipro treatments. Sometimes it seems to work, but in other cases it's making people worse. And we're like, well, okay, so maybe there's a treatment here, but who are we gonna try it on? And okay, I understand if you're in a desperate situation, you want to try sort of pretty much anything, even if it's off-label, of course. And the clinician treating you should be open to doing that. So if there's evidence that the quinine and chloroquine and whatever, there was another one, hydroxychloroquine, I think it was called. If that's useful, okay, why not? You know?
Well, that's good because they've been using it for
Huh.
decades. They know what the, how dangerous it is. That makes sense. But this new stuff,
Well,
go ahead.
let me add this little caveat to the quinine debate. So there's a phenomenon called quinism, right? And it induces bizarre neuropsychiatric effects. Now, if I was to get a little conspiratorial, if we're trying to just sort of look at every avenue. And if someone like myself can look at the available scientific information, I'm pretty sure that I'm not saying that these people in the NIH and Fauci is his name,
Yeah, Dr. Fauci.
and General Adams, and I have to presume they're being informed to some way as to what's going on. And I would say this: if you thought that you were facing an agent like COVID that has this potential as a neurotropic agent, right, that can induce bizarre behaviors, it's almost like a way of sort of camouflaging the effects of the agent by saying, well, it's the treatment, not the disease. Do you get what I mean?
I do, but don't you think the treatment shouldn't be given to people unless they're in critical condition or I mean, if they don't need it, they shouldn't get it.
Yeah, for sure. I've seen reports today of doctors prescribing for friends and family to sort of try and hoard these agents. And I would, again, of course, it always comes down to the individual and the treating clinician and what you think works for you. If it's off-label, you have to sign all kinds of waivers anyway. My worry would be if they just start saying, okay, everyone has to start taking these.
That'd be ridiculous.
Well, it'd be ridiculous, but it's also a way of sort of camouflaging the neuropsychiatric effect. So say there's this potential to sort of spin out into behaviors, these odd behaviors that sort of.
Yep, because it has, like I had Dr. Joe on, and he was saying that you start seeing pink elephants and rainbows. I mean, they know it has that effect to it. But if the drug is actually treating what it needs to treat, it tends not to have that same effect, and people shouldn't be given it unless they really need it.
And I'm all for judicious use of interventions like this, because the same thing that happened with the toilet paper will happen with the drugs, right? and
Yeah, I agree with that.
people will
Yeah.
start hoarding them, the price will get ridiculous, and then you're gonna have, like I say, the unlike the East in Japan, where there is a degree of social order, I just don't see those constraints in place in Europe and the US. And this is where I think there's this potential for flashpoints. So whether it's because you've loaded up on quinine, or because you've got a pathogen on board that's messing around with your nervous system, I think the effects for the general public at large could probably be very dire. And that's what the point of having this conversation is, to try to make people as aware as possible of these particular outcomes. So one, you avoid them, and two, you make informed decisions for yourself and family that protect you over the long term. That would be my take right now. But it's evolving.
Yeah, I mean, everything's evolving. I mean, what I was reporting a month ago is not quite the same as what I'm reporting now. It's changed a lot. But again, tell people where they can reach you.
So you can email me, Kevin at Synaptech, SYNAPTEK.JP. Twitter at Kevin, so it's capital K for Kevin, and then McCann, so capital M, double C A I R N. Have a website, Synaptech, so it's SYNAPTEK.JP. I would just add that, as you were saying, like sort of a month or so ago, I didn't expect to be doing this, trying to get this sort of message out. I was just sort of watching, but the degree of incompetence I was seeing, I just felt compelled to try and have to do something. And it's very, very obvious to me that the neuropsychiatric component is just being ignored completely. And I think what we should do whilst we have time together is I should probably explain to your audience perhaps why the, or this would be my opinion as to why the pneumonia seems to be so difficult to treat. Are you okay with?
Yeah, go ahead. Let's take a little bit of time and just explain that.
This I saw this week, and basically this is from Italy. The subtitles are there, so I'll just speak over it. But basically, these hospitals, which are in place to deal with these sort of severe cases of pneumonia, are just failing, and they're finding it very disturbing. And I would push for, they're not recovering, and literally they're having to make the decision. This is how bad it's got, that they're taking older people off ventilation,
I
euthanizing them with
know.
sedatives, and then basically saying we have to give the respirators to those.
The younger ones,
And
they're
you know,
making triage decisions, and it's really sad to watch that. That's not something we ever want to be part of.
And but it's happening, right? And so if your relatives are getting triaged into a situation where they're making these decisions and they're having to be treated with mechanical respiration, it's important to know that this virus, because of its neurotropic action, it can climb or infect the nerves that innervate the lungs. It climbs back up the nerves and then targets the brain stem. Okay, and there's an area in the brain. So I'll just sort of flick through slides, that sort of, so I can look at it. So it's in the brain stem, part of the medulla. It's called the Botzinger complex, or dorsal respiratory group, or, sorry, ventral respiratory group. And this region has this sort of rhythmicity to it that controls your breathing. Now, if you're dealing not only with fluid buildup in the lungs, but also your ability to breathe is affected, then you've got an attack on both sides.
Oh,
And
geez.
I really think that most medics are just completely unaware of this fact, right? That there is this.
Yeah, it's a bigger picture here. It's the holistic way. You got to look at how the brain's affecting your ability to breathe as well as your lungs being filled up with fluid and inflammation.
Yep, absolutely. And if your brainstem is under attack, And they're trying to sort of just treat the inflammation in the lungs. Of course, the outcome's going to be troublesome, right? But like I say, there's this issue with. Let me choose my words carefully here. So, all people can't be all things, okay? And as hard as doctors work, if you're going into the pulmonary center for treatment, those people are not thinking about the neurological aspect generally. They might have some sort of understanding, but they're going to concentrate on the thing that's most obvious, which is fluid buildup on the lungs. And they're going to put the inability to breathe and pump air in and out, they'll put it down to fluid load. And of course, that's a factor. But they're not going to be thinking about the neural aspect. And this is where the problem lies for me. And this is, people are not talking about it, and people need to be aware about it. And can I sort of offer advice with respect to treatments and such?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
I
This is
would be.
important. This is probably one of the most, this is the most important part of this whole show right now. So go ahead.
So I would say, with the caveat that one, I'm not a medical doctor. I'm a research scientist that just happens to have a good understanding of these networks, and I recognize behaviors that are being perturbed by them. So if it's the asymptomatics that are just showing odd behaviors, right, and they're getting a bit impulsive, or they're showing obsessive compulsive type behaviors, anything like that, I would say that the standard sort of pharmacological approach for treating those disorders should be an option. And that's probably the easiest thing to sort of dampen down what would be potentially people coming out onto the streets and being putting themselves and others in danger. Okay, so if you see a loved one that you know is acting a little bizarre for how you would normally expect to see them, keep this in mind that there might be this assault ongoing in the basal ganglia. That's a possibility, a high possibility. Okay. With respect to someone that's getting put into the hospitals for, well, just basically being triaged into like ICU environments, I think right now I would have to sort of go with the consensus that if the quinine type drugs are helping, or the antivirals, the remdesivir, there's no harm in trying, right? I don't think these you're in an emergency situation, right?
Exactly.
And you don't care what the fire extinguisher is. It could be your curtains for all you care, right? You just got to get the
Exactly,
fire put
yeah.
out. So I would, get as informed as possible, so understand the neural side effects as well as the somatic. Understand what treatment options people are using, whether it's the quinines with the Cipro antibiotics, and I've got slides where we're. But anyway, these slides, they are saying that they work. So this slide, and if it was me and someone I loved that was in those situations, and I was seeing that. They get to watch someone get intubated, especially if you care about them, is highly traumatic. Okay. And you want to avoid it at all costs, I would say. So I would, if your loved one can't do it, I would say at least sign the release form so that that you can try the treatment, but be aware that sometimes it can make it worse. And I don't know the situations, how it's going to be in hospitals. Normally I would say, if you can, try and be as close. That my guess is they're just going to make hospitals patient-only zones, and the visitors are not going to be able to go in
No, they won't.
and see them. So, I was going to suggest, if you could, you just try and sort of be close to who, your loved one in the hospital, and keep an eye on them when maybe the nurses. But you can't do that, so it's pointless. So, just try and keep them in mind, prayers, anything that you think's gonna help. And I guess the only thing that I would add as a caveat to that, to people who are parents, it does seem that the young mercifully seem to be being spared somewhat. I know there's a young child passed away.
Yeah, there's it's still it's they still just like with the flu, you know, it's a small per 1 out of 500 people or something, children can succumb to this, which is awful. But
it's not like they're suffering like their adults are, and I think for that we can be grateful. So
okay, so again, give us your website and your YouTube, and then we will well, thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, I mean, it was my pleasure, and thank you very much for sort of listening to me. So if people just want to, they can just Google my name. It's Kevin McCairn, so MCCAIRN. You'll see plenty online with respect to my neuroscience work. Put that name into Google. You should get to my channel. My email is kevin@synaptech, so synaptek.jp. And I will answer any questions that people have. I'm doing, so far I've done a pretty good job, I think. You know, people are contacting me, and I'm you know, the family's been sort of forgiving enough to allow me the time to do that, and I want to sort of continue to do that. And I think the more we can sort of calm people down a bit, I think forewarned is forearmed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the more educated you are, the more information you have, the better it is, I think.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I hope people support your work and they go and learn more about this. They've been introduced to it enough to be able to say, hey, there might be something more here. So thank you.
Thank you very much. I will email you the details with respect to the videos, and I'll send you everything, and you decide what you.
Okay, that sounds great. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Sarah.